Welcome to Rome. This is The Bittersweet Life with Katie Sewell and Tiffany Parks.
Hello, this is The Bittersweet Life. I'm Katie Sewell. Tiffany is away this week, but I'm joined by Kayla Merrill. She is a U.S. native living in the countryside of Umbria with her Italian husband, Ludovico, and their 15-month-old daughter. She and her husband first met in Australia, and she was there on a whim, and Ludo was learning English to start a new career. And the two fell in love and were planning to eventually marry when Kayla's mother was suddenly diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And as you can imagine, just like that, their lives were forever changed. And she's joining us today to talk about some of that grief and sorrow and the new beginnings that came from it, and how her and her husband decided to change their lives and create what would one day be their legacy in the green heart of Italy. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I feel like I listen to podcasts all the time and I always hear the intro, and now you're introducing me. It's making me teary-eyed.
Aw, that's sweet. But you're actually not in Italy right now. Where are you?
No, I'm not. I am in Ontario. We've spent like the last 2 months on the road from Vermont. Now we're in Canada. We went to New York City. We're at the end of our trip and we're visiting my 89-year-old great aunt, which is amazing. So we're in the nation's capital. We're in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. And tomorrow we head to Toronto.
And then back to Italy. So this is the final.
And then finally back to Italy, fly into Rome, head straight to Umbria, and get ready for another season on the property.
Yes, yeah. Which we're going to get into what the property is in case any of you want to visit later. All right, let's back way up. Since we are going to talk about your mother, why don't you tell me what you and your mother's relationship was like as you were growing up?
So I was raised by a single mother. My mom was French Canadian. Her name was Jude, J-U-D-E. And she was born in Quebec City and then moved to Montreal. She raised me in South Hero, Vermont, which is a tiny little town on an island, mm-hmm. basically bordering Canada. And my town was about 2,000 people. So I like to say that I grew up in a place where, you know, farmers markets and eating farm to table was the way of life before it was cool and trendy.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of that. And the more I travel, the more places I live, I realize how special my town was and still is. So I grew up with basically just my mom, although there were people coming and going. My mother was married 4 times by the time she died. I'm the product of the third, and I don't have any siblings. It was just myself and her. And we had a mother-daughter relationship that I feel as though I've never seen anywhere else. I've never met anyone who's had quite that special of a relationship, in the sense that we were joined at the hip and we were so in tune with each other, but never really crossing that, you know, mother-daughter, parent-child line. Sure, it was crossed because I was naturally more mature, being raised by a single mother and always being surrounded by adults, and even just being an only child, you know, you tend to be around your parents' friends and things. And so I had that, but she still protected me in many ways, but always treated me as though I had my own opinion. So like my mother would always tell this story. My grandmother was with us when I was maybe 2 years old, and my mom's asking me, do you want an apple or an orange? And my grandmother's like, what are you asking her for? She doesn't know what she wants. And that really, to me, is like the essence of how my mother raised me. My voice always had a place, mm-hmm. and my opinion and how I felt, there was always space for that. Like her advice of parenting was always just to listen to your children. And she would get so bothered by seeing mothers or fathers in the grocery store and the kid is saying, mommy, 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 mommy. And they're not answering, they're ignoring them. And instead, if they had just said, yes, darling, what is it? You know, if they're heard, so many of those tantrums or whatever would possibly go away.
Hopefully.
I'm still learning. But yeah, it was that simplicity of her approach. And her approach was actually quite surprising because she didn't really come from a home where she felt supported or loved. She was the caboose and was, you know, raised to feel as though she was a mistake. And that her mother couldn't wait to leave her father once she was out of the house, you know, so everything was her fault and she didn't feel safe. I think she spent a lot of her life searching for that safety. And I think the one place she found it was with me. Mm. She couldn't really trust most people that came into her life where she didn't feel that she could. Mm. And I struggle with that now where I watched my mother be let down by men for most of my life, or I watched her protect herself from the disappointment of the security of a man. Mm. Or what she thought that might be. And so I think I've watched that for so long that I'm protecting myself too, now that I'm a mother and have a child and I'm married. And that is something that I'm starting to notice, that I'm too protective, or I'm preparing myself for something that is never going to happen because I've actually found a man that is nothing of what our collective history was, my mother and I. So yeah, we were always in each other's foxhole. And, you know, if there was anyone in our life, we decided to let them in together rather than, I don't know.
No, that's interesting. So given that you decide to go live abroad in Australia, if you guys were that close, like that sort of forged relationship, what did she make of the fact that you wanted to move so far away?
Yeah, so it actually didn't even start there. I left home at 16.
Oh, wow.
As I was on the road for musical theater life, Broadway, everything. So I went to a prominent theater school outside of Boston for my junior and senior year of high school, and then went on to college in North Carolina. So my life at home was cut short. And then from there, moved to New York City. And then from there, decided I was going to move to Australia. And the Australia part was poignant because it was literally, like, if you look on a map, the absolute farthest you could have gotten from South here of Vermont.
Yes. Yes.
New Zealand might have been slightly further.
Yeah. Not a subtle choice. Yeah. Other side of the world.
Yeah. It is interesting. And the only thing I can say about it is that my mom, like, our love was so fierce that it didn't need to be in the same room. The connectedness was so deep, and she always supported me every single idea, every single step of the way. The musical theater, that was thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in the end. You know, she just trusted me that that was what I needed to do. And then when I decided to move to Australia, I was actually traveling in Turkey solo and met some Australians who convinced me to go to Sydney. And I emailed her from an internet cafe and said, what do you think of this? I could go to Australia and start working at a bar or whatever in Sydney. And she wrote back, sure, but come home first so I can help you pack. So I flew from Europe back to Vermont and was there for 3 weeks. She helped me pack. And then I began my life in Australia. And there wasn't sorrow in that. Yeah, it was always being supported. And that's something I've really had to work through since she died, is trying to support myself in the way that she was my number one cheerleader. Every single day I heard positive reinforcement. And she died and it was crickets. There was no one telling me how well I've been doing, that I'm beautiful, that I'm cut above, I'm doing all these amazing things. There was no one there telling me that. And I was left to have to tell myself. And I often don't believe myself when I tell myself things, unless I tell myself negative things, then I believe myself fully.
Right. Yeah, right.
So,
Yeah.
and yeah, I guess some people could think, wow, she was traveling as far as she could possibly get from her mother. But it was really quite the opposite.
Did you have an intention of how long you wanted to stay in Australia? Was it sort of an experiment, or was it, hey, I'm moving completely over here. This is now my thing.
I was 23 and had just broken up with my college boyfriend. It was I have to go see the world. And I went there as I'm because I'm also a Canadian citizen. I went there as a Canadian, so that meant I was able to stay for 2 years, do a working holiday visa, but you have to do rural farm work in order to get the second year visa for 3 months. So I did rural farm work for 3 months on a vineyard down south. Yeah, it's crazy. And like people have so many stories of rural farm work and then stayed. And then when I arrived, I guess it was pretty amazing the opportunity that was available in Australia. Like I keep saying to people, it's the American dream that once was. Like if you want to make something of yourself, you can do it there. And couple that with like an American work ethic, and you rise to the above so quickly. So that was really attractive at a time when I had spent so many years in musical theater and just the constant rejection, which is that world, to be good at something. I switched careers and went into the wine industry in Australia. It was always kind of a hobby of mine, but I didn't have time to focus on it. So I went there and decided to focus on that. And just to be good at something from the beginning and to be rewarded for that was so attractive. And it's such a rich country that salary is good. I was living on a beach in Sydney. Like, it was amazing. The longer I stayed, the more it was apparent that I could really make something of myself there.
How does Ludovico come in?
So my friend that I met in Turkey got me this job on the Sydney Harbour, which was on an island looking at the Sydney Opera House and the Sydney Harbour Bridge. And there was this Italian bar owned by a Roman who's now in Rome. He's actually now the beverage manager of the Hoxton in Rome. He's still a good friend. Great.
Nice.
He was running it and hired all Italians. It was all Italian guys working there, and they were making the best pizza you could find in Sydney. My friend got me a job as a bartender there. I had never bartended, and Ludo was working there, and he was manager at the time. So we worked together and we talked a little bit. His English was not very good then. And he came up to me pretty soon into us working together, like maybe 2 weeks in, and he's like, "So you like Italian food?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." 23, like, oh, who'd like first kind of experience with Italians? And he's like, "Okay, I'll cook for you. You'll come to my house." And so then, flirting, and then we were together for a year, and then we broke up. He broke my heart.
Oh.
He had some family things going on back at home, and he needed to go back to Italy. And so he couldn't handle this needy 20-something, that just wanted him to love her and then also care for his family back home. And after my mom died, or actually while she was sick, I realized in that moment how out of touch I was when he needed somebody, he needed support when we were first together, and I was so oblivious and could not give that to him. And he truly gave me the most incredible support when we were going through my mom's illness. But so then we spent a year and a half apart in Sydney doing our careers, and then finally we got back together. And it was soon after we got together that my mom was diagnosed. And then from there, I had said, I need my mother at my wedding. really without understanding that she was going to die anytime soon. You know, like, no matter what the diagnosis is, there's always hope. Until it happens. Like, it's amazing how humans just, how resilient we are and how much hope we hold on to.
When you said that, were you hoping that he would propose, or was it sort of like, you said that and he's like, well, hey, how
no,
about?
we went on this like big hike, I remember, and it was right on the coast of Sydney. And we had this big talk of what we wanted to do with our lives. And it was very poignant because in general, we're not big, like sit down and have these big talks with each other. We come together at the table with wine and good food and good music and all these things, but we don't sit down and have these like huge existential conversations. So this moment really stuck out to me because it was that we were like, where do we want to live in our lives and what do we want to do? And I think I had just kind of said like, you know, I need my mother at my wedding. That's like non-negotiable. And that was it. And, you know, 2 weeks go by and right before I was leaving to go back home to be with my mom, to care for her, he proposed. Yeah, I was totally surprised. It was funny.
Katie here popping in for just a moment. I want to give you something to think about. If you live in the United States, chances are that you are already sick of talking about politics in the lead up to the election that we are facing in November. According to the Pew Research Center, 65% of Americans, when asked, said they felt exhausted at the thought of politics. Super Tuesday just happened. We are just getting started in this election cycle. And no matter what side you stand on, one thing we can all be certain of is this is going to be an exhausting, irritating, and stressful election year, most likely. So here's something I want you to think about. When the election is exactly 1 month away, where would you like to be? Do you want to be at home, stressing out in the last month before the election? Or would you prefer to be in Rome, learning about ancient and medieval and Renaissance Rome, seeing how this beautiful and ancient city still influences our thought and life and culture today? Do you want to be seeing hidden sites that tourists and locals alike never get to see? This October 2024, from the 6th to the 12th, Tiffany and I are taking a group of lucky listeners on a tour through Rome, a tour like no other. We want to open doors of thought and sight so that you walk away from Rome feeling refreshed rather than exhausted. And what could feel better during an election year than being refreshed and inspired rather than depleted and annoyed? Space is limited to 10 rooms only. You can come by yourself or bring one friend. I hope you will consider joining us. Send us an email, bittersweetlifepodcast@gmail.com, and I will send you all of the details. bittersweetlifepodcast@gmail.com. And how great it is? Well, you don't just have to take my word for it. Here is one of our listeners who traveled with us to Rome last year.
I would absolutely recommend it. It was just one of the best weeks I can recall. I mean, all this stuff was intriguing to me, and I didn't know much about it. So it was a week of education and pleasure, of course. Lots of nice people gathered together, and Tiffany, extraordinary guide, knowledgeable. Oh my God, it's unbelievable what you keep in that brain of yours. And then Katie always does such a wonderful job of things. So, yeah, I don't know what else to say. It was just a great week.
All right. Send us a note. Let us give you all the information. bittersweetlifepodcast@gmail.com. Come to Rome and be renewed in the run-up to this election. Now back to the show. Well, let's speed ahead. So you want your mother there. You do go home. Was it evident, like, once you went home, was it evident you talking about that hope, was it evident that maybe she was sicker than you were thinking?
Her doctors had said, I came back with the news of being engaged, and she told her team of doctors, and we were originally thinking September, and she asked them what they thought, and she said, if you have a choice, it's better not to postpone joyous moments. Mm. And so we moved it to June. That meant we were planning a wedding. I think he proposed at the end of January, early February. So we planned a wedding across three continents, because I was mostly in Vermont and then he was in Australia, and we were planning a wedding on Lake Como, where Ludo's from. And we did it within 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it was incredible. And it was like, yeah, some of our best work.
My wedding was the same way. It was planned like ridiculously fast. And I feel like, yeah, you know, sometimes that is the way to do it.
Yeah. People that like, they set the date. And, I mean, everyone does set the date a year in advance. It's just wedding talk for ever and ever. And we both said, like, can you imagine if we had to keep talking about this? Like,
yeah. I know. Get it done. Don't get too lost in the details. So your mother's there in Lake Como on your wedding day. Yeah. What do you remember most about her being there at this point?
Her shaved head, her sweet little head. She had stopped chemo for this trip. And she had a shaved head. She looked like Annie Lennox.
Mm.
She could totally pull it off, and she lost so much weight through the chemo that she just had this sweet, skinny little bald head, and her smile, but she was so skinny that her smile was already very big, but now with not much else there, it just took over her whole face, and she was so happy. She was so, it was like grinning from ear to ear the whole day, and she pushed, like, I mean, we danced, and she was not a sick person that day.
Mm.
And most guests at the wedding were shocked to hear that she then died 2 months later.
Mm-hmm.
Truly, the transformation from that to the day of death was pretty incredible.
Yeah. Well, in the initial email that you sent me, I actually wrote this down. You were writing about your mother, and this is a quote that you write. I thought I'd ask you about it. You said, she died with me in her bed at home in Vermont. I experienced death firsthand and saw what the body does. So I kind of want to ask, like, how do you end up there? Do you go like right after your wedding to be with her? And then I also want to ask you, like, what did you see in that moment? Tell us like what you saw.
After our wedding, Ludo and I did a quick honeymoon in Spain, and then we went back to Australia. My mom went back to Vermont with the intention to start chemo again. During the wedding, I think she had said to her best friend, who was also there, like, I'm ready to give it another go. Like, you know, I think she was inspired to keep living, seeing all that joy and being around all these people. And so she went back, and they could not start chemo again because her bilirubin levels were too high, which I like now forget what that means.
Yeah.
And she kept going in, you know, this is only over the course of a week or two. And she kept going for visits to see if they could start. And in the end, she just said, you know what, I'm done. So they said, okay, it's time to call Kayla and tell her to come home. And I had gone back to Australia to start this brand new job that was going to kickstart, or what it felt like was going to kickstart my career in the wine industry on an international scale. Maybe did 1 or 2 weeks of work and then got a call from her saying, it's time to come home. And I think I didn't even cry, which is so amazing because I'm a crier. Yeah, like, I mean, there's so many layers to it all. Like, I, you know, watching your mother become a child, it was like accelerated aging, really.
Hmm.
It was this, like, truly potent aging process that took place over the course of 9 months rather than 20 years. So yeah, when I got back, she kind of was still okay. It's hard to remember it. Like, she, you know, she was just in bed and kind of deteriorating, but there were never machines. There was never hospice. There was no room at hospice. So she couldn't go to hospice. Mm. And she was married at the time. So he and I were sharing the daily tasks and caring for her. And I think we thought to maybe a few days before or a week before that she was going to die, like she would kind of go in and out. And I don't even, it's funny that you asked me, because I feel like no one has actually ever asked me that before. Yeah, I've written it so many times. Her body was, she was so skinny and she was in this big bed. And my mom was like, kind of, she wasn't overweight. I mean, she was a little bit overweight, but she was always full. You know, she had this big appetite for life and for food and wine and raised me that way. And so to see her so skinny, what it was, always felt like this like cruel joke, just mm-hmm. that wasn't her. I mean, we went through a lot of experiences together in the last week or so of her life, that where she really was hallucinating and was childlike. And I think I was just like, I was so present. I mean, it's amazing how something like that can make you so present, because you're just trying to accomplish the task at hand. But then she wasn't letting go. She never spent really a full day where she was completely like in a coma or anything. She was pretty lucid. But then, you know, talk about going on a trip, or have I packed my luggage? And mm-hmm. she's in a green velvet room and all these things that are signals for death. And we had no support from the hospital, nothing. So I would spend nights like sleeping. I would put a single cot at the foot of her bed, because I was afraid she was going to try to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night and fall and hurt herself. And so I would like barricade the path so that if she got up, she would step on me. When I was sleeping on that cot a couple nights before she died, I had this crazy experience where I woke up a shot awake because I felt someone stepping around me. So I shot up and my mom was still lying in bed fast asleep. So I lie back down and then I hear a crunching like of a comforter. And I feel someone stepping around me. I look up again. She's still asleep. Then I lie back down and I'm like, all right, just go with it. Like, I was never really spiritual. I was never a spiritual person or religious person growing up. I think I was mostly just like thoughtful person and an observer. But losing my mother has made me a little more spiritual, in the sense that I feel as though she's still here. But mm-hmm. in that moment, I was like, okay, just go with it. And really, there was this wave, like pins and needles wave, from the top of my head all the way down my body, straight through my body, surging through. And it kept doing it over and over again. And I could still hear the crunching and walking. And at some point, I must have just fallen asleep again. And looking back, I think, if we want to go crazy, woo-woo, but I feel as though that was the moment when her soul left her body. And then the days after that, she was just shutting down. Maybe she died 2 or 3 days after that. And those days were mostly, yeah, sleeping and not really eating. She wouldn't let go. And no oxygen or anything. Like, she was just in her bed.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of painkillers. So in the last moments, I was like, I kind of had enough, because I was like, all right, she needs to die. She wouldn't want this. So I kind of just had this feeling like, okay, we got to get the show on the road. And so I laid with her, and I have no idea how long this was. Like, it feels like it was 10 minutes, but it might have been hours. And I was making the sounds of the ocean and kind of mimicking a place where we spent a lot of vacations together, in Vero Beach, Florida. and we would play in the waves for hours. And so I was making the sound of the ocean, and I was telling her, it's okay. It's okay. You're floating in the ocean. You're doing like almost like a meditation or something. And I look back at it now and think, like, how did I do that? This is your mother. You know, most people are scared to even have some sort of conversation or see their loved one die. And I look back at that. I couldn't stay in the room with her too long after she died. And actually, I should say that she didn't die in that moment. Then I left the room because I was like, okay, I need a break. And I went down to my bedroom for the first time in a while and like sobbed in a pillow. And then my father figure came in and said, Kayla, she's died. And you hear this a lot when you start to read stuff about death, that really people do wait until their loved ones have left the room. Mm-hmm. When I went up and kissed her, I looked at the clock and it was 7:11. Sorry, it was 7:01. And I like to do these weird number things that when I was born at 1:07. Mm. And we both have January birthdays. So I liked that moment, and I have had many of those experiences since her death of things that I feel like must be her.
In the aftermath of this, you had a bit of an existential crisis, and somehow that leads to you living in Italy, in Umbria, and owning your own house there and sharing that house with other people. What is the shortened version of how that all happened? Like, how does it go from existential crisis to a whole new life outside of Australia, outside of the United States, etc.?
Yeah, basically, I went back to Australia, and I was lucky enough to not have to work for the first 6 months after I lost my mom. And that was really special because I felt as though she deserved some very intense grieving. It felt like my duty. And so I spent a lot of time feeling angry and sad and journaling and walks and wondering what the point of it all is.
As you would, of course.
I still wonder that.
Of course. Half the show is probably about that. I don't even know. Yeah. It's not a stated mission statement, but it's definitely an undercurrent, certainly.
Yeah. Like, why do we have all these, why do we care, like, you know, how people see us or what our morals are or all these things? Like, if you just die, like, what is the point? And the best thing I could come up with was legacy. Mm. Because I think my mom left a pretty darn good legacy. Everyone I speak to when I go home and visit tells me the same story of how she listened to them and listened to their problems and then was brutally honest with them and told them things that everyone else is afraid to say to them. And she touched so many lives and helped so many people in her own brutally honest way that has carried on for so long and still stays with so many living people, that the best thing I could come up with was legacy. That doesn't mean my legacy is going to be the same as hers. So Ludo and I, after we planned our wedding, our fabulous Lake Como wedding, we were like, wow, we're really good at this. And, you know, we have we were like, you know, in the midst of like tragedy, we created this insane wedding, and, you know, not on a huge budget either. So anyway, we were like, you know, we have so many skills that really complement each other. What are we going to do? We didn't have a family yet, a child, but we knew we wanted to start a family. Do we want it to be in Australia? Crummy apartment, beachside, but still crummy, falling down apartment costs over $1 million Australian, as opposed to a villa in Uber, which is like half of that. Mm-hmm. Ludo had spent 10 years in Australia by then. He really missed home, and his parents weren't getting any younger. Also for him, my mother's death was a big wake-up call. I mean, my mom died at 63. Mm-hmm. And then a friend of ours, not even a close friend, someone that doesn't really know us that well, said just in passing, like, oh, I could really see you and Ludo running an agriturismo or something like that. And I went home and told him, and we were both like, huh. And then we started thinking about it. Like, it wasn't even on our radar. And then, like, all of a sudden, it just was like, brrr, all these ideas were coming and coming and coming. And we start looking at real estate online, and then we did multiple trips to Italy separately because we didn't want our jobs to know that we were considering moving and leaving them. Mm-hmm. So I would go, I traveled there two times, he did once, and I was with his father, who spoke no English. We were in the car, we totally bonded on these trips. Like, we have a special bond. You know, a lot of wine and food helped. And somehow we would communicate, and we viewed like 50 houses all across Umbria, a few in Tuscany, mostly in Umbria. And never once were we like, are we sure? It just felt right. And we were saving so desperately every paycheck in Australia we were putting away while our friends are, you know, going out. And we really were so determined. So fast forward, we get the house. We got approved for the house like right after the pandemic hit. So we had already, we were ahead of the game a bit because we already had cooked up this dream pre-pandemic. So the mortgage got approved and we were like, okay, we have to tell our jobs. And then we packed everything up and left within a month and moved during the pandemic. So we arrived in Umbria and had to quarantine at our home for 2 weeks.
Yes.
And swear to God, it was the best 2 weeks of my life. It was 2 weeks of childlike exploration, like exploring your new home, this place that is totally yours. And, you know, it's a villa. It's not this little house. All this land. And the previous owners had left it with a lot of stuff in it. So we worked day in and day out cleaning out the house. I cleaned the whole house with a broom. We didn't even have a vacuum. And the brand hadn't been cooked up yet because we did that once we got there. We had like an idea of what we were going to do, but that brand itself and truly like the message and the website and everything, that all happened once we were there. So we didn't have a care in the world in these 2 weeks. Yes, living in the countryside in Umbria is incredible, but we're also running our own business and have a 15-month-old daughter.
Right.
Stress takes over. No matter what landscape I'm looking at, which is something I'm working on, but when I think back to those weeks, it was like what life is all about, like that pure joy. Just not a care in the world. So yeah, then we cooked up this business, which is countryside rentals. We have 5 apartments on the property. The villa is divided into 5 different apartments. We did extensive renovations mm-hmm. when we got there. Put in a pool. Most of the hard work was the landscaping, which when we bought the place, you barely could see the view. Now it's amazing. So we have these countryside rentals and then authentic food and wine tours, which we offer to the people that stay with us. We don't expand it to a larger audience just because we're only 2 people.
Right. That's fair.
And, and we also offer retreats and a lot of fun, immersive experiences. We want to create, you know, a boutique hotel in Umbria. And that is what we're working towards. And so now we're searching for our own home. It was okay before when we didn't have a child. And we've got a couple apartments where you can kind of, we moved from one to the other, depending on what we rented or, you know, kind of living out of a suitcase. But now, you know, our daughter needs her own bedroom and a place to call home. So we're looking for something that's nearby and then we can really fully turn the property into what it can be because the potential is so great there. So yeah, that's been difficult because I do say to a lot of people, like, I haven't even really been able to hang up a photo of my mom.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
But yet I need to look at the brighter side of things and think that she is everywhere. It's that I don't necessarily need a photo to remind me of that.
Mm-hmm.
It helps.
Yeah. So what is the name of the place?
The property is Poggio Belvedere. Poggio means like on top of a hill, and Belvedere is beautiful view. It's also a nod to where Ludo grew up, which his street name was Belvedere, and they had a beautiful home on that street. So that was a little bit of an homage to them, but it's also very true. We had Kathy McCabe from Dream of Italy come to our property. She's been doing her PBS show for many years and writing about Italy long before that, and had said, like, this is truly one of the most beautiful views I've ever seen in Italy.
Oh.
And it is. It's so hard to capture with photos.
Mm-hmm.
the view, it just keeps going. Every time you look out the window, you see something new. It's beautiful. You have to come.
I know. Well, okay, I'm going to put a link to it in the show notes. You and I have not talked about it much, except that before we started taping, you did say that for people who are coming on the 2024 Roman Adventure with the Bittersweet Life in early October, that if somebody wanted to come in a little early and come stay with you, that you would be willing to give them 10% off. So
absolutely.
If anybody who is going, or any of you listening who are still on the fence about deciding whether or not you're going to go, and that sounds like something that you want to do, then let me know and I will pass you on to
absolutely.
To Kayla.
October is the best month.
It really is the best month. and actually late September too is also lovely. It's just it's just such a sunny, not too hot, very pleasant time to be there. It's like the perfect summer that you can imagine here in the United States is what's happening over there at the time.
Yeah.
There are so many things we didn't get into. I think if I do come to visit you, or if you and I talk again once you are back in Italy, I do want to talk about what it was like for you after all this happened to give birth to a child by yourself in a country that you had just moved into. But I think we have to leave it there for today. And you have to get back onto your vacation. But thank you so much for coming on the show, for sending us a note, and hopefully this won't be the end of our conversation with each other. Hopefully we'll get to do it again.
Can't wait to have you. Yeah, you and Tiffany both. Maybe Tiffany has to come and scope out the place before you.
Yeah, she may. She's the one with the child, so her schedule's always a little more challenging than mine. So yes, she would have to arrange it on her own. Do you want to say like the name of the website? I mean, obviously look in the show notes, but just in case somebody's walking and wants to Google it later.
Yeah, you can find us at veroinitaly.com. So that's veroinitaly.com. Or on Instagram, it's the same, veroinitaly. There's a couple of underscores in there, but I'm sure you can find us without the underscores. and you can email me directly via our website too. My email is linked there. And yeah, we're always happy to hear from you. We've also got some really cool all-inclusive self-guided packages that we released this year for travelers that really gives you like our best of album. It's really, an incredible experience. Our areas, the more I travel and the more places I go, I keep coming back and remembering and realizing what a special pocket of paradise we have, really. And the small producers around us are so incredible, and there's so many young people doing incredible things in our area, and not even Italians know about our little area.
Well, I look forward to coming by someday, and good luck getting home, finding that new house, getting home from Canada, getting a home once you're in Italy. Do keep in touch and let us know how it's going. And
thank you.
All right. And we'll leave it there for now. And until next time, this is The Bittersweet Life. I'm Katie Sewell. Talk to you soon. Bye. If you love this show, support it. For as little as $5 every month, you get to hear two bonus episodes, and even say hello during upcoming meetups online. That's every month for as little as $5. Visit thebittersweetlife.net and click support to explore ways to pitch in to keep this show you love on the air.